Aaron Gies. Aaron, welcome back to Hardline.
Morning, Joe. Thank you very much for having me. How you doing this morning?
I'm doing all right. Oh, I should say, like Dave Ramsey says, better than I deserve. Aaron, we haven't talked to you since the primary. How's the campaign going?
Yeah, it's going great. I don't know if you heard, but we just launched a 100 town hall tour. And we've done two of those town halls so far in Jamestown and in East Aurora yesterday. And both were standing room only. So there are a lot of folks out there that are excited to hear from someone who could potentially represent them in Washington and let them know their concerns. So we've got another one on Monday, and we're looking forward to it.
I also heard that you and Congressman Langworthy have a debate set for WETM in Elmira in October.
That's true. It's very exciting. October 6th. I forget what the airtime is. I think maybe 5, but folks should check that out. And that'll be moderated by Jim Turpin, who hosts Talk of the Tiers on WETM. And I'm looking forward to it, but I have also challenged Mr. Langworthy to do a series of in-person debates with me. I'd love to do 4, you know, in each area of the district. And the reason for that is I really think that people deserve to see us in person and to ask us questions directly. And you can't do that with a TV debate.
We'll have to follow up on that. Aaron, you know, obviously we've been following the primaries throughout the country. New York kind of right in the middle of this primary season. And I want to know your thoughts. And I thank you for coming on. I thank Jim Fink for helping us get you. I want to know your thoughts. You are running in a more red than blue district. And we are seeing campaigns. Adam Bojack right here in Western New York. Obviously, we saw some of the congressional candidates downstate. And then Abdul Al-Sayed in Michigan, this push from Democratic Socialists. Do you think that is a good move or bad move for your party? And do you think it affects your campaign?
Well, let me say, I mean, first off, I'm not a socialist, and I'm certainly not a communist. And it's funny because my primary opponent, Kevin Stocker, was accusing me of being secretly MAGA. So it's sort of funny to be attacked from the right and then be attacked from the left, like sort of a 1-2. But I'm for the common good. I'm a capitalist. I don't think we need to change our economic system. I think that we need to work within our economic system to take care of each other. You know, for example, I believe that every family deserves a doctor, even if they're poor or they live way out in the county. So, you know, whether that's a good move for the Democratic Party as a whole, you know, I don't feel like I'm qualified to speak to. We'll see what voters think about it in November. But there are certainly some great candidates. And I should say lots of more moderate candidates also won their primaries over the last few weeks as well.
But I think of someone like you running in, you know, I live in your district. It's a pretty, I don't want to call it MAGA because, you know, it's a more conservative district. Trump and Langworthy both won that district pretty comfortably. Do you feel like it's taking away from the things you want to run on because you have to then clarify where in this party you stand?
I'm honestly not getting that. So our district is, just to clarify for folks, we've got a lot of independents. So we're about a third independents, about a third Democrats, and then the rest are Republicans. So it does usually vote conservative, but I'm honestly not getting these questions from independent voters that I talk to. They're asking me about the stuff that they're concerned about, the so-called kitchen table issues. People are worried about how they're going to afford gas and groceries and health care and education for their kids. And so that's what we spend most of our time talking about at town halls.
I got to ask you this, because on your website, you talk about raising the federal minimum wage to $15. And you just mentioned there, you know, tough times. People are having trouble paying their bills. I did half my show on Friday talking about how 65% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. Here's where I'd like to hear where you think it could change, because in 24, that's, I think that and immigration is how Trump won in 24, because, you know, Biden did not have the best economic record. Not much has changed with everything going on in the Strait of Hormuz. People are, you know, spending over $4 on gas. Now, I could be critical of how New York pumps that number up, but let's just talk about in what people are feeling in their wallet. So it seems like every time one party's in, the other party says they have the answer for the economy. What do you see is the real problem? Because if we're being honest and not looking one way or another, this has kind of been sustained over, you know, multiple presidential administrations.
So I agree, Joe, that both parties are at fault here in the long term. And I think that the root of the problem is that there's too much influence from the ultra wealthy in our politics. The ultra wealthy are always going to push for more profit for their shareholders, more profit for themselves, and for regulations that make it more profitable for them to run their business. And Congress has been really, really interested in doing whatever they say. We've sort of gotten used to this idea that the purpose of the federal government is to subsidize corporations and hope that they make life better for us. And we're seeing right now how that works out. So we really need a tax code that is fair, where the ultra wealthy pay their fair share, where corporations are taxed fairly, and where working people get a little bit of relief. And I think the good news is there's a lot of Democrats running on that this cycle. You've also got a lot of Republicans talking about waste, fraud, and abuse in the government. I don't see them stepping away from their corporate donors, but, you know, the fact that they're talking about that means that they know that their voters are concerned about it. And that's good. That means we can build a coalition for change. Now, for short-term relief, what we really need to do is roll back Trump's tariffs and end the war in Iran, both of which are things that Congress could and should do. And I think if we flip Congress in November, we will make those changes and bring down costs for people in the short term.
You know, I hear the Trump tariffs is obviously one of the few things that Democrats seem to be aligned on, no matter if it's this democratic socialism or moderate Democrats. Do you think there's anywhere in there where Democrats could find common ground on some of the tariffs, or do you think all of them have to go?
So there are a few places where Congress is probably going to want to keep the tariffs in place. For example, Chinese EVs, we need to give our domestic automakers a little bit of breathing room to catch up because China is just eating our lunch on EVs right now. However, most of them have to go. And the clear principle that needs to be underlined is Congress controls the power of the purse. So this levying of tariffs unilaterally by the Trump administration is illegal and unconstitutional, and Congress needs to take the power back.
Congressman Kennedy was in town, gosh, I think 2 weeks ago now, talking about the Big Beautiful Bill. And he and Hakeem Jeffries were talking about the cuts on the Big Beautiful Bill. Now, when I look at that, Aaron, someone on the right side, I try to be moderate on this show, but on the right side of things, I say, well, the bill cuts off people who are able-bodied, who don't work, or illegal immigrants. Right. Do you think those people should be allowed to get Medicaid and all the things that they were cut off the Big Beautiful Bill?
Right. So in most cases, probably not. There are exceptions, and there should be exceptions to those cases. For example, like if there are, say, children who find themselves alone here in the United States, you know, through no fault of their own that are immigrants, then, you know, do we really want them to not be able to access medical care if they need it? I do. But, you know, what I'm more concerned about is the effect of these work requirements, that just requiring confusing paperwork and repetitive paperwork for folks. I talked to a guy at the Cattaraugus County Fair a couple of days ago. He was wearing a God, Guns, and Trump hat. And, you know, we flagged him down and started talking with him. And it turns out that he was legally blind. He'd spent his whole life working really hard. And in the last couple of years, he had lost his eyesight almost entirely. We were just like bright blobs to him. And, you know, truth be told, if he could see, he probably wouldn't have stopped to talk with us because he didn't know we were Democrats. So, but we had a great conversation. And one of the things that he told us was it was taking him months and months and months and months to get on disability. So he currently had no Medicaid. Now, under that big, beautiful bill, that guy would be required to work right now. And that's just not possible. So, you know, he has medical needs right now. So when we impose these onerous requirements, it's been documented in places that have tried this, a lot of people fall out of the system who the system is actually designed to help. And there are other ways to keep people from freeloading off the system than these onerous requirements.
Aaron, if you were to be elected and go to Congress, how far down the list would impeaching the president be for your priorities?
So the priority is definitely trying to make a good life affordable for the people in New York 23. That's got to be the top priority now and always, really. But, you know, elements of the president and his administration are standing in the way of that. You know, we talked about the tariffs and the war already. So what I'm for is accountability. I want to see people who have done things that are illegal or that perhaps are crimes receive pushback. And I want the folks that have been victimized by those actions to receive restitution. I think that's important so that, you know, we can help the people that have been hurt, and also so that our allies can see that we're a nation that is ruled by laws and not by, you know, unaccountable, corrupt politicians. I question whether impeachment is the best way to do that. We've tried it a couple of times. It didn't work. But there's no question that we need accountability for everybody in the federal government, not just for the president.
But do you think for people, Aaron, and I'm not assuming your age, but I assume that we are around the same age. In our lifetime, we have seen two presidents be impeached three times. Do you think it risks taking away the weight of what impeachment is supposed to be if Democrats do go for a third impeachment?
I mean, that's sort of blaming the folks that are trying to do something about it, you know, to have to ask, like, how did we get into this position? You know, if somebody is, you know, taking away from the weight of what impeachment is supposed to be or from the dignity of the office of the presidency, I think that the accountability for that should probably belong to the person who did the high crimes and misdemeanors and not to the people that are trying to rectify that situation.
Do you think if Congress does take back, if Democrats do take back Congress, but Republicans keep the Senate and obviously they have the White House, do you think it'll be 2 years of nothing getting done for Americans if it's just back and forth? Or do you think behind everything that we've talked about, there is some common ground that the three houses could actually get together and do something?
Okay, there absolutely is common ground. First of all, through the budget, the reconciliation process, you will see Democrats, you know, keep the government running and, you know, pass some of the American people's spending priorities. It's been a real shame to see so many federal workers fired and so many services, you know, stopped and started over the last couple of years. And I think the American people have certainly had enough of that. There are definitely areas of common ground that we could work on. People ask me, you know, a lot, like, who would you caucus with? You know, who would you talk to in Congress? And, you know, one thing I always say is, you know, the Western New York caucus has got to be pretty important here. You know, whether those folks are Republicans or Democrats, whether Alyssa Elman wins her race or Claudia Tenney gets reelected, you know, if I'm in Congress, my primary dialogue partners will be the members whose districts border New York 23. You know, so Tim Kennedy, Josh Riley, Alyssa Elman or Claudia Tenney, and Northern PA, that rep as well. Because we share a transportation network, we share electrical infrastructure, we share watersheds, and we need to think about how we walk into that future together.
Aaron, I have one more question for you. I thank you for being open to answering any question I throw at you. I got to ask you this one because I said on my show this week that any Democrat that comes on from now to the end of the show, and to the end of the election cycle, and I hope you'll continue to come on the show, but this has been a big talker. Do you think biological men belong in women's sports?
Oh, boy. This is a tough question. And it's a question that, honestly, I haven't seen people having trouble deciding in this district. I think there have been some national stories about it. But, you know, I think that, you know, that's something I'm going to have to think more about. But I will tell you this. I'm not the parent of a trans kid who wants to play sports. But if I were, I would hope that the other folks in my PTA, in my child's class, the people in our community who are directly connected with us, would work out a way for my child to play with their friends and not turn it into a big political hayfest. And I just think that's the way we need to treat our neighbors.
Interesting. And I would love to, Aaron, if you have time this week, call into my weekday show. I'd love to have more conversation back and forth because you didn't like hang up. You didn't say that's a ridiculous question. I appreciate you actually giving an honest answer. It's election season. And when I have candidates on, if there's something you wanted to bring up that I didn't, take this opportunity to do so.
Well, I mean, I'll say what I've said before. We're running to reclaim the common good. So much policy making in America now is zero sum. You know, I win, you lose. You lose, I win. I think I didn't do that both ways. Anyway, I'm interested in policy that's win-win. Not right or left, but better or worse. And I want to make things better with housing, education, our transportation network, particularly our healthcare network that desperately needs help right now. So that's what I'm for. Let's reclaim the common good, Joe.
Aaron, appreciate the time.
Absolutely.